Warning, this podcast contains rude, crude, and prude language, which might burn your ears if you listen to it for too long. Listener discretion is advised.
No, you're just waiting for Jerry or Brian to give you some love.
That's what I was going to say.
I'm giving you love right here, right now, bro. Get excited, son.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, found online at manadeprived.com and 60cards.com. This week's episode has been brought to you by Forbes Hobbies.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team. KYT.
Everybody was metagaming against each other because we saw each other's decks.
Jay Boosh.
I'm not going to ask a homeless guy for a deck idea, okay? I'm going to give that guy some change, and, you know, I'll probably half my sandwich.
Smitty.
Just completely edit out Jay Bush, like, out of the whole thing.
Scotty.
But what is it with people that live in French countries that like blue-white control? Are you guys just, like, do you have that big of a chip on your shoulder? Like, what is it?
And now, the A-Team.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode 29 of the A-Team Podcast. I'm once again joined by my co-hosts, Jay, Scott, and... Actually, Jesse's not here right now. He's going to join us hopefully midway in the show. To start off, our first topic is last weekend, it was game day, and Scott, Jay, and I played at game day. I actually did really well. I ended up winning the whole thing. And how did you guys do?
I top eighted, which was pretty sick.
I top eighted out of 11. Well, 13.
So game day obviously generally has a lot less people than your PTQ or pre-release. Of course,
I don't know why. I always thought more people would play game day, but
we still had 18. Like, we did fine.
That's a fair question. We had roughly 18 as well, Scott. But like FNM, we could get close to 40 people.
So really?
Yeah.
Well, and then the other thing is like there's not very many standard tournaments. Well, especially in like Canada, other than FNM, right? So,
in paper,
I always just think that, you know, like more people would show up to game day because it's almost like a pre-release, but for standard, like it's the same kind of idea, right?
Yeah, I think what's really nice about game day and the only way that they're going to make them successful, because this is sort of the first time that they did it, is make prize cards that don't totally suck ass.
I've said that for a while.
You know, like Memnites were fine because there's decks that play them, but what was the other card? Like, I don't even remember. Like, what was the last one on game day?
Yeah, I don't know. And one time it was like Mitotic Slime.
Yeah, like the M11 game day or something.
And everybody went nuts about that, and I was like, that's gay.
Yeah, and you see how much play that plays. But like this time they got it right? Like, they're like Treasure Mage, which is seeing, you know, reasonable amounts of play in two, you know, decent standard decks right now. And then you got Black Sun Zenith, which arguably was one of the most, you know, sought after cards upon initial launch of the new set. And well, the artwork is fucking bonkers. So
the other thing is that, do you think that they make those decisions like after, or is it like future league? Like, do they know which cards are going to be the game day cards like 2 years ahead?
I don't know if it's quite like, you know, 2 years ahead or anything, but they've got to make the decision in and around the time the set's printed, right?
You think so, right? Like, but then I would think, like, you know, it'd be really cool is like if they released the set and then game day is about like a month later, right? And then they would just like, I guess, like make the decision based on like the feedback that they're getting after the set came out.
Who the heck took Mitotic Slime then?
Yeah. Well, the problem is you got
to
figure, like, how long does it take to create the print run? How long does it take to then and distribute that across the world? And yeah, and then pump it up and prime, you know, just in time. Like, yeah, no, no. Unless they move game days out to 2 months, in which case then, you know,
it becomes irrelevant. Yeah,
because then we're partway through to the next set and
yeah.
So they must make the decision ahead of time.
Curious question, guys. How much did you? Because it varied for our game days at my store. Initially it costed like $15 or $20, and the tournament organizer at our store decided to reduce it to like, now it's like $5 or $10, like very, very small entry fee.
Ours was $10.
But then too. did your prize support lower?
Right. I mean, the boosters would be based on how many on the money that was given. Like when it was $20, there were a lot more booster packs given to first place.
See, okay, right. I got to ask you a question, Jay. I'm assuming that based on your lack of initial jump on this, you guys were prized out in boosters as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe it's just Toronto, but a lot of the places that I go to, they don't actually prize in boosters. They just take the contribution of the pool. And in terms of the money that was paid in, and then they just divide it out amongst the top four winners in terms of a dollar value, and it becomes store credit.
Yeah, our F&Ms are like that.
Like Scott, dollar value, and then is it directly in like 1-for-1 store credit or like?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so like the way you got it, well, you got to figure, right? Like they're really just running the events so that you'll spend money in the store and stay there. So, I mean, to them, it doesn't matter.
So you run in on game day and be like, okay, I need 4 Hero of Oxidridge for my Boros deck. And they're like, that'll be $40.
Yeah. So, but then at the same time, like we carry the same thing over from F&M as well. So, you know, like at any given moment, I've got anywhere from, $30 to $40 on the wall, as it were, just in case. And so then it also aids because you kind of like are able to attend more often. You can kind of perpetually play that way.
Oh, okay. So you're just saving off credit and using it. Okay.
Yeah. So that way, and so it works the same way. But I mean, like, so if you win the tournament and you win like $60 or whatever, then yeah, you could pull it all out in boosters if you wanted to. But I mean, then they get to charge, a regular rate for boosters too by doing it, right?
Yeah.
Conversely, I mean, a lot of people that are playing in standard tournaments and stuff like that, they'd rather just like, well, shit, I guess I won, $25. I guess I'll pick up that sort of Feast or Famine now.
Do you get trade or store credit? Or is there no difference in Toronto?
There's no difference in Toronto.
Okay.
Maybe that's not entirely true either. So it depends on how you earn it. Like if you want to talk about, like, I mean, you can go to a store and you can say, well, I've got some stuff that I want to trade in, so what do you value it at? And then you basically take that and they'll value it a little bit higher than it would be if you were cashing it in, for example.
Yeah, yeah. But then do they give you trade, which is only, like, for example, at my local store, you can sell your cards or you can trade them, right? If, like, so you sell them, you get, let's say, half the value. If you trade them, let's say you get 65% or 70% or 80%,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
But then that goes towards trade, and you can only use trade for singles. And then at F&M, you win, like, $25 in store credit, which you can use for singles, for boosters, for comics, for toys, for drinks, for food. Like, it's store credit, right?
Yeah.
Whereas trade is just for trading singles.
Yeah, I know.
Anything in the cases.
It's interchangeable.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think I'd probably, like, because game day is being held at a store, like, I don't know, I think it's probably better and smarter as a business for you to give store credit.
Yeah.
Or trade, because A, I'm spending money at your store, and then, like, if you give me $50 in store credit, I might buy a Jace for $50.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Right? The other thing is that store credit doesn't cost you any money, right? So you get $15 in entry fee from everybody, and you give away $15 in store credit, but you only really paid $8 for that fucking $15 card anyway.
Yeah.
So really, you gave away $8.
Yep.
Right.
Like that to me seems like just smart business.
Yeah. So it's generally like everything that we've had has been pretty good in terms of the local scene, and a lot of the stores kind of follow suit. And game day was the same way. So, it was kind of like top 8 got the prizing, support from Wizards. Everyone got the Treasure Mages. And then the top 4 split out the prize pool, based on a, whatever it ends up being, like 50% of the total pool for first, and then it goes like 20, 10, or however the hell it breaks down after that. I mean, similar as you'd break down top 4 in a poker tournament, right? So
yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty sick. You know, it's like, and you get to kind of perpetually maintain your stuff. So anyways, what did you play? So KYT, I'm assuming you just played Kago because that's what you do. But Jay, what did you play? Because it's probably...
Hey, you just skip over me?
No, okay. we'll come back to you as we start talking a bit more about the metagame, I think, maybe. Jay, I have no idea what you did play. So let's start there.
So me and Zach worked really hard on that Suicide Blacklist and it just wasn't coming together fast enough. So I just defaulted to Boros. I made a couple of changes. So I what did I do? I believe that I took out the Murin Crusaders. Cuz they're just like too slow and you get to live the dream with like a Murin Crusader with a sword on it. Like that's pretty sweet. But like it almost never happens. Like if you get a Murin Crusader with a sword, they'll just try to chump it as much as possible, because it's like you hit twice, right? So and it was just too slow. They just die really easily, and there's not a whole lot of black and green in the like in my area anyway. They don't really do anything against Tezzeret because all of their 5/5s are artifacts. So you know, like and like Slagstorm and Bolt and etc. Like it doesn't interact well with the other decks. So I replaced that with a single Kemba, and in the board I put 2 Emiria Angels instead of 2 Crusaders. I never actually sideboarded them in. They were for Kago and I didn't actually have to play Kago. Because that's a question I'd like to ask KYT is what do you do against an Emiria Angel in Kago?
I just eat it. No,
it trades with your birds. At worst, right? And right, at best, right. It just makes infinite chump blockers for your shitty birds.
Right. I think, like, Emiria Angel, if you get a bunch of chump blockers, I mean, I feel like usually what happens against Boros is that I'm scrambling to keep my life total at a high enough level anyways that if it gets, it feels like I'll be so scared of Oxid Ridge, all the Goblin Guy plated GOP, and I'd be too worried about that to be even thinking about attacking you at any point.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Right, so I don't think if I survive to the point that Emiria Angel is my biggest problem, then maybe like I'm starting to, like it gets to the point where I'm about to get over the hump and take over the game or something. Because there's a lot more scarier cards in Boros. I'm just going to die like very fast.
Right.
So I'd have to play it out. But obviously it's good because it blocks.
It was just everything. A thought that I had, right? Like it was just a thought.
I mean, people came up with it for the mirror, right? Some people use it for the Kago mirror. So definitely, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like, and I'd never heard of it. Like actually Cody Crossman suggested it like right before FNM.
Okay.
So I was thinking about it and I was like, yeah, that like sounds like it would actually work. But again, like it never actually ended up getting boarded in. Like I think it's too slow for red deck wins or like the Boros mirror match. Like it might be able to be used in the Boros mirror match because again, like Boros just like Kago can't really do anything about it. Like,
and it's just matter of Oxid Ridge being better, and you don't want that many 4 drops, probably.
Yeah, and that's probably correct, right? Like, the thing that I was always worried about with Oxid Ridge, though, is that it's not like secret tech anymore. So then a lot of times what happens is you just don't drop your Planeswalker until you have counter mana, or you don't have a Planeswalker, so I go to like drop my Oxid Ridge, and you simply just counter it or kill it with like a burst lightning or a bolt lightning or a go for the throat, right? Like people are saying that it's like the greatest card ever, and I took out 2 Koths to put in like so I don't play any Koth. I play 4 heroes, and I still don't know if that's right or not. Like it worked out really well on game day for sure, but I still don't know like if I feel that it was better than just playing 2 Koths. You know what I mean?
Right. My experience is I played the GPT 2 weeks ago and round 1 against Boros, and he was the reason that, you know, I got crushed because I had these Hawks that were going to buy me enough time to land at Gideon, but yeah. He just like plays Oxid Ridge. And has like a Steplings or some other guy and then just deals like over 12 damage. Yeah. swing. And I'm like, it's what? Fair,
yeah. I mean, the other thing too is I find is like his second ability I find isn't like relevant a lot of the time. Like it's a really good ability, but there's like,
you're talking about battle cry or the not can't block?
No, the can't block ability, his second one. Like it I know that it's like supposed to be the stone cold tit nut, right? Like it's supposed to be just crazy. But a lot of the times I find that they just put down a two drop.
Maybe
like they just play a goblin guide, or they just play like Kuldotha Red has sometimes they play those goblin war callers or whatever, or like, do you know what I mean? Like, do you guys ever experience that? Like, or
I think
it's because you didn't face Kago that day. Like,
yeah, I think here's the
thing. You guys have a sword, don't you?
Yeah, so that's one dude. There's only ever one to two swords on the table at once, right? I think it had its time in the sun when there was a lot of Kuldotha Red going on, you know. And I'm not saying that it's not still an amazing card, but I would definitely say that at this point in time, I think four of it's a little rough, you know. It really, really feels like, especially now with a lot of the green white, you know, coming more to the forefront, and like more, you know, more bigger dudes, like more tutus that are being played, more grizzly bears, that he's definitely losing some of his, you know, optimal surprise factor. Now, that's not to say that there are times when you run him and he's just good game. Like, especially, man, in Kago, right?
Yeah, there was a time where somebody played like a Gideon and then they like made him go +2 or whatever, and then they attacked with like their two hawks or whatever, right? Because they were like, well, all your guys have to attack Gideon, so who cares, right?
Right.
And he's at like 8, so I don't got nothing to worry about. And because Oxidridge came down, like they were tapped out because they were just misplaying. And so I just killed their Gideon, and then it ended up like losing them the game because they could have cast something instead of Gideon.
Baneslayer Angel?
No, I want to say maybe Sunblast Angel, but I don't think that's right. But they were going to cast something else, or they showed me their hand after, and they were like, oh, I guess I could have cast this. And I was like, yeah, like what you should have done is cast that and then waited a turn and then cast Gideon and played it smart. And then maybe it was even something like something else, like a blocker or something. But because I just killed their Gideon in their first shot, it was just like it opened up the game, right?
Yeah. So, KYT, which version of Kago did you play? Did you play the red one with the splashing like Jerry, or did you play the Esper one like with the Inquisition of Kozilek, or did you just keep it straight and play blue-white traditional?
Okay, so that's a topic that I obviously want to get into with you, Scott, later after this game day discussion as to which version of Cobblade is the best, because obviously it's one of the best decks, and if you can find the best version of what is apparently the best deck, then that should be the deck that you should play. What I did was obviously the black list wasn't out yet, right? Only the red list by Jerry, and obviously he's our boy.
Yep.
So we gotta, I got out of rep him, and I played his old list from Star City Games DC. He updated it for Edison, but I didn't ask him for the changes. They were like small minor changes, like putting the Inferno Titan in the main. But I played his original list, and I liked it because I beat Boros, though he had a slow draw, just with Spark Mages, killing Steplinkses, and was able to beat the Mirror when in the finals. The guy was playing straight blue-white. When he landed Squadron Hawk, and my turn three was Spark Mage. Like, my turn, it was just a sick draw. Like, turn two Stoneforge and turn three Spark Mage, kill your Squadron Hawk, and then he's like, okay, I'm so far behind.
Yeah.
And I think at this point it's still hard, outside of like Inquisition Kozilek, to get that Stoneforge advantage. It feels like whoever casts Stoneforge is usually gonna win the game. So the tech, I haven't fooled around. There's a lot of techie cards that we can get into, but that's what I played. And didn't drop a match.
Nice. That's awesome. I ended up running Jesse's green white Vengevine list, the green white Lead the Stampede list, which was absolutely awesome. We had been honestly, we had so much fun. We had been so far ahead of the tech, you know, in terms of understanding, you know, if Kago is really relevant, you need day resistance. If you know, there's if Valakut's sort of on the decline, then, you know, and there's not as many Titans running around, then Vengevine's better. And So we ended up creating this green, white, Vengevine list, Fauna Shaman and whatnot, that utilized Stoneforge Mystic and Package as well. So, and Lead the Stampede was just absolutely insane. So I think the only non-creature spells were like two equipments and the four Lead the Stampede and then land, right? So it was really good. Had a lot of fun. A couple changes to be made, obviously, and Lewis Laskin and crew kind of came out with a similar list on they were hot on the tech, as it were. You know, we kind of came to the same conclusion, which was really sick. And Jesse, I'm sure we want to talk about that. So
I was quite impressed, Scott, because after the show last week, you were the one, I think it was you at least, that suggested to have a Miser's Copy of Mastercore, and it ended up being in the Lewis Laskin deck as well. So impressive.
I found he's just better than Thrun, especially in a creature deck. I mean, the idea is you want reach and you need some way to kill walkers or, you know, stuff you can't normally get to. So anyways, I played the list. I went I top eight. I got in against Boros round one, and so round one I get stuck on three land. He lands a Mirran Crusader and equips it with adventuring gear, and it was only a matter of time before I lost the number of hawks that I could block with. And then game two, he goes double journey, arc trail two for one, then lands Gideon, then lands Koth.
Ugh.
And I'm just like, I'm like, good game.
Like, what, was he playing Boros?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, I have got no answer to that. Like, I literally have nothing, right? So it was a rough top eight, but at least I got there. The only match that I dropped, I don't even remember what I lost to. I could probably go back over my notes, but like, it was really good. I played Valakut. I played a similar green white list, and blue black is what I played as well. That was embarrassing. from my opponent. Yeah, it was really bad. Because he's just like, all right, Inquisition. I'm like, okay, discard whatever. And then I proceed to hammer him with Lead the Stampede, pitch two Vengevines, and then cast Squadron Hawk, and it was, and then Mystic. Like, it was just bad. I got turn two Mystic, turn three Lead the Stampede into discarding two Vengevines.
And, like, I was thinking about that. Lead the Stampede is never bad on that deck.
No, never. Now,
because you can even play it like when you have seven cards in your hand.
Yeah.
And like then you just discard Vengevine, and then if you can't get a Vengevine, you discard other creatures that are irrelevant.
That fuel and then Mastercore later.
Yeah.
Oh, dude,
that's fucking crazy.
I'm telling you, like, there's so much fun with this deck right now. The only I'm problem still not I'm gonna having. Play it. Oh, the only problem I'm having with it is I can't beat a Titan. Like, somebody resolves Inferno Titan, it's good game.
Yeah, I'm not going to play a deck that can't handle Titan.
Now, Laskin has brought in Laskin's brought in Core Hookmaster.
And yeah, so is that what everybody was talking about?
Yeah, I was playing Journeys in the sideboard.
I was like, what year is it?
And, well, yeah, but you know what? You tutor him up with if you need to, you just tutor him up with Fauna Shaman, right? So you can mise one copy just to like get through there. But what's awesome is you bring them in as a removal out of the board without having to dilute your Lead the Stampede count. Yeah. And you're just like, play him, tap your guy. Play him, tap your guy, and you're just always swinging in for damage. So it was, it's a lot of fun. It's definitely worth some changes. Jesse's made a couple. I'm still not sure what's right. Whether it's something like Overwhelming Stampede, which was what was played, or whether it's something more like keeping the equipment package, or whether it's a Johnny Goldmane, as Jesse would tell you. So, I mean, if there's any deck that's going to need, you know, that's going to benefit from Vigilance and making your dudes bigger, it's a Vengevine deck. But anyways, it seems like a lot of fun. I just found that I didn't run into enough Kago. Like, there really wasn't enough of it there. And there was a lot of Goblin Guide decks. So that's like, had the right call for the professional meta, not so much for the game.
What do you do? Like, buy, like, the event decks?
I don't know. You know what? I just realized when my first round loss was to my buddy Jacob. And he fucking played Mono Black Infect, and how ironic was it that it spanked the shit out of me, Jay, right? After me fucking giving him shit about it being a bad deck. And he goes literally like, turn one Nexus, turn two Plague Stinger, turn three Piston Sledge, and I'm like,
yeah. Yeah, you just lose. You just straight up lose.
So bad.
Yeah, and like that was the thing, is like the deck that Zach and I worked on was very similar, and it was just crazy good.
Yeah.
Like crazy good. But then when it was bad, it was like you just get really frustrated because you're just sitting there and you can't actually do anything.
Yeah. I ended up taking, so like the first game he like walked me, and then second game it was just that he drew no gas and I was just like lead the stampede, pitch a vengevine. Like it was over, right?
Yeah.
Game three was a bit back and forth, but again, whenever you're like Plague Stinger with a Piston Sledge, or you know, Piston Sledge on any Infect dude,
anything. And the thing is too is that like late game, your Nexuses, or not even late game because that deck doesn't get to late game, but mid game or whatever, I guess, your Nexuses are artifact creatures, so you can always just animate them, sack them to re-equip the sledge, right?
Yeah, and get there. So it was pretty good, but it was a lot of fun. I had a good time at game day. I'm really curious to see, you know, I'd like to talk about your Cobblade situation, because I mean, where I'm at now is my hands are fucking right up in the air in terms of what to play. You know, I really really liked being able to, you know, we've got a TCG event in Toronto coming up next weekend, so
there's
KYT and I are going to be there. We're working on maybe a special guest appearance from the Boosh. We'll see how it goes. But
if you guys, speaking of which, if any of our listeners want to help me get to Toronto, any donation, large or small, is much appreciated.
You can send said donations to me via email at PayPal at no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. And yeah, we can always pay. I can pay it back. I can give guest appearances on the show. I can sign cards. I can show up at your F&M. I can get you a shirt. We have A-Team shirts coming out. So if you want to, I remember like when I first started on Twitter, I remember Norbert 88, Kaka, the original Kaka. We were trying to. He was trying to get somewhere, and I was a nobody. Nobody knew me, and I took it upon myself to organize a get Norbert to wherever the fuck I can. I don't remember where he was going. Norbert, if you remember, let me know. It was like a long time ago, but we were trying to organize something to get him where he needed to go. Donations, rides, and it was like a fucking cool like internet thing. It was like, well, we could get him a ride from here to here, and then he'd catch a ride with this other person. Then he'd take a bus ride 3 hours that way, and then someone would pick him up on the way down. Yeah, it was crazy.
Did he actually end up doing this?
I think he ended up not being able to go at the last second, which kind of sucks because it was like, well, all that work was for nothing.
But he's like looking at the plan. It's so elaborate. I'll just say I can't do it.
Yeah, it was like a Rube Goldberg machine.
But yeah, so we're going to try to get you out. It's going to be good. So if you guys want to help, feel free to chime in and we'll let you know how you can help us out. But yeah, so
we do have a lot of listeners. So
I mean, a dollar from every listener would get more than half the way there.
Well, that would also get us all the worlds. But
and more, and then some.
And then some.
Scott, before you go to, I just wanted to ask, we all got a foil black Zenith, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Like I was talking to Sal from Face to Face Game Store, and I think he told me it was worth roughly $18 or something like that.
Yeah. On game day, the store card guy was buying him for $20.
Wow. Wow. So like definitely one of the bigger, like the biggest game day prize.
Easily ever. The biggest game day prize ever. Yeah.
So. Yeah.
In my memory, anyway.
Pretty sweet that we each have one.
Yeah. Well, and it's the first game day promo that I've not immediately just been like, who can I rip off into trading this to? Like, who can I Medina this away to?
I was offering $10 a piece because, you know, that's what it was at. And I almost actually secured a couple extras. So I was so close, but then I decided it was time to leave.
Yeah.
Bad. Yeah. If I traded it that day without like consulting anyone, I'd probably trade it lower than what it's worth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably would have done it for 12.
Yeah, 12 to 15 for me, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Cuz that's the thing is it's like it's just a game day card, right? So you have that stigma of like all game day cards are stupid. It's also not like being crazy played right now. It's seeing some play, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like, you know, it's not like fucking Hero of Oxid Ridge or a sword or Gideon or, you know what I mean? Like it's
right.
It's not in every deck that plays black. And it's usually if it is, it's in the sideboard, right?
Yeah.
But it's still a crazy card.
Like the prize cards. Did you obviously it's for every game day where you have this rule where if your deck is like a faction deck.
Oh yeah.
I didn't have a single deck at our snout. I mean, I may be wrong, but I didn't see a single one that was faction enabled. Not
such really?
A fail.
Every deck at ours was faction enabled. Like, what? There was guys that there was guys that showed up and they were like, how many cards do you have to be faction enabled? We'd be like 10. And they'd either be like, yes, I have exactly 10. Oh my god. Or they'd be like, oh really? I think I have 4 Phyrexian cards in my deck. So what cards should I replace these really crucial good cards with? And they would go and buy them and replace them.
Wow.
Yeah, for us, it was like, I don't know what it was, but for us, everybody wanted to be faction.
I think I'd die laughing if someone actually did that. Oh my god, I have 10, exactly 10.
Yes!
It happened.
Boros is not Phyrexian or Mirren, is it? Like, don't you have a
class?
Yeah,
it's Mirren. It's Mirren.
It's mostly Mirren, yeah.
Right, so you have 4 Hero of Oxid Ridge. You have the swords. That's okay, 6 right there, right?
Right.
And then what else is even in Boros? I should know. Fuck. You can put Mirren Crusaders in there real easy.
You had Kemba. Yeah.
Bone Horde.
Did you play Divine Offerings? Like that for a Cobblade?
Yeah, Divine Offerings. Bone Horde.
Bone Horde is Phyrexian, dude.
Oh.
Man, you cheated.
I don't know if I cheated. I guess I cheated.
Well, you didn't win. Did you? Like, did you?
No,
win?
I didn't.
Those special prizes, it's like...
Well, this is the other thing. So, like, I don't even know what the special prizes were.
For us, it was, like, cards from the... I think it was cards from the next set, right, yeah. Scott? It sounded like... go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, there was one card from Mirrodin Pure and one card from New Phyrexia, but we don't know which one is actually going to be released sort of situation.
Right, yeah. No, we either didn't see those or they were given out long after I left because nobody even talked about them.
Gotcha.
I thought you had to be faction aligned to get your Black Sun Zenith.
Oh man, that would have sucked for you.
Like, that's what I thought. Had I known that, like, you had to be faction aligned to get like a shitty common, I wouldn't have cared. That's such a fail.
Right, so that's why you made me laugh so much with that expression there of a guy, yes.
Yeah, I was trying to figure it out. It was like, what are you talking about? That's worth $20 fucking Black Sun Zenith KYT. What are you talking about here?
I think it's like a fail of a promotion. Like, this faction thing, it seems to have.
Yeah, I think it is too.
So no one really gave a crap about it.
Certainly not this time around.
No. Well, even the casual players, like when it's just for commons, even the casual players aren't going to care. Maybe what they should have done. See, and like if they were smart, what they would have done is they would have taken. They would have taken faction, leftover faction packs, and given those out.
Yeah.
Right? You have a Mirren aligned deck. Here's a Mirren booster and the Mirren card.
Hmm.
Right? Because then at least you have the chance of opening something.
Right. You're not getting a card you can't use right now.
Yeah, basically. and like what are they gonna do with those faction packs? Nothing. They can't, right? So like, I don't know, fuck. Hey, Wizard, how about you just hire me for marketing? I'll stop swearing. And I'll make really good marketing decisions for you for things like game day. Okay. Sounds good. Damn it. Yeah, sounds good. Just hire me. Mark Rosewater. I could answer your Twitter for you. And market things. Pretty good job interview. Pretty good. Winning.
Nice. All right, so Cobblade.
Yeah.
Let's
Are we talking about Cobblade? Are we talking about Black Blade? Are we talking about Cobblade?
So well, I'll tell you what. Before we get into this, it looks like Jesse's finally joined us. So,
but he hates. He doesn't know.
Okay. So now that Jesse's joined us,
he doesn't know anything.
I know, but now that Jesse's joined us, we should give him an opportunity to talk quickly before we start talking about Cobblade and all of its different variants, because they all make up different portions of the metagame.
Yeah.
Let's give Jesse an opportunity to talk about how we got to the green white list, where he's at with it today, and then we get into Cobblade. We got to give him something. We've like cut him out the entire episode.
Yeah, why you guys just like not let me talk? You guys are motherfuckers.
what an intro, man.
I know. I'm just playing. Love you guys. So, no, how we got to the green white, I mean, I don't know. I got to give myself a second to think about that. I mean, really, like, Cawblade was dominating, and I was just like pondering ideas that would counter it. And like naturally, I just like came to the conclusion of Vengevine, because I'm like, holy crap, Volokku doesn't exist as much anymore, and which opened up about a million deck ideas I had. So it kind of just like through testing and everything evolved that way. I just wanted to make a strong, fast Vengevine deck, but really just use the same powerful cards that the meta like was created around, like the Squadron Hawks and Stoneforge Mystics. So it was just an evolution of like that thought and the anti-Cobblade thought, which is basically just Vengevine.
Yeah.
So, yep.
But wait, I don't understand what the anti-Cobblade is with Vengevine.
Well, okay. It's just a super aggro deck. I mean, Elves is good against Cobblade. Any Vengevine deck is good against Cobblade. Like, even Allies is good against Cobblade.
Okay, so let's address some of the Cobblade strengths. Okay. So,
Green seems pretty good.
Okay, so here's something. Yeah, but that's a vacuum. Okay, so here's, and it's one dude. So here's the issue.
But you don't have any removal in green-white.
You're right, but you got chump blockers for days with your own Squadron Hawks and other white dudes. So it's totally irrelevant.
But they proc green. I'm saying like they.
You're as a Squadron Hawk green. Would you just let me finish? Proc green doesn't mean shit when you chump block it all day. Did I not okay. just say all that?
Right. All right, fine.
Anyways, here's the thing. So the most effective tools that Cobblade has at its disposal from a control standpoint are Day of Judgment and Spell Pierce. Okay, so and Gideon of course, but that's something else. So. In terms of answering those three things, you're looking at Day of Judgment. Vengevine does a fantastic job of countering Day of Judgment because it keeps coming back. And Lead the Stampede in conjunction with Vengevine is totally bonkers. And we talked about that earlier, right? Because it's like you always cast Lead the Stampede and it's never bad. And then the other aspect to that is you look at Spell Pierce as one of their more controlling elements, but the only targets that you're really ever actually casting is fucking Lead the Stampede. And although it's a critical spell to counter, like, you don't leave in Spell Pierce for one fucking card. That's narrow and short-sighted.
And even if they do, it doesn't matter. They just...
Yeah, exactly.
That's a misp. Like, you want them to almost do that.
Yeah, exactly. Because then they're committing resources and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So that being the case, the only other real question mark is Gideon. So Vengevine on a recurrence and swing back into Gideon. Two vines, which is more... occurs more regularly than you'd think in terms of them swinging in. Kills Gideon at 8 anyway. But more importantly, you've got access because it's a creature-heavy deck. You can play creature answers. And with the Fauna Shamans, you can tutor them up pretty quickly. But like Phyrexian Revoker, for example, is a really good answer to Gideon. You know, you just play him and say Gideon, and then their big 5-mana spell is useless to my 2-1 dude. That also isn't green. But yeah, so that's what we found was really good, and initially that's why it was able to do so well against Cobblade.
Absolutely, and honestly, like oftentimes you can just straight beat them before they get a chance to drop Gideon.
Yeah, because I mean there were times where like we were swinging in on turn 3 for 8 or more, just on vines.
Yeah. Any hand with like opening 2 Vengevines is probably like in the 80-90% win percentage bracket.
Yeah, so it's pretty powerful. So it did its fair trick against Cobblade. But like, again, the issue is against Boros the matchup's a little rough, and the reason that the matchup's rough in Boros as opposed to Cobblade is in conjunction to the protection from green, which is obviously relevant when you have a sea of dudes that innately possess that ability. Okay, like the Crusaders, and you've got swords. So when you can diversify, the number of prot green dudes, then it becomes an issue. But when you're just dealing with one at a time because of Cobblade, it's not that big of a deal. So,
well, and also a Johnny Goldmane version really helped the Boros matchup, actually, because your guys just like outclass theirs pretty quick if you can stick him with like even just 2 or 3 dudes on the board. Yeah, Nest Invader is a champion of champions against Boros.
Yeah, because you get the extra two guys. Now, obviously, it eats an arc trail like no one's business. But I mean, I think that's part of that. That's part of the skill that Boros has, or I guess the success. Part of its success is its removal package and how good it is against the meta right now. Like arc trail is fucking insane. It's a great card, and I mean, yeah. I've seen some of the Cobblade lists even now. You know, the ones splashing red are picking it up as their choice of removal. But I mean, like being blown up by Arc Trail, Journey to Nowhere, and three guys that may have protection from green on the board—that's a problem for this deck. Would in all transparency, it's pretty painful.
And then, how does this deck do against Tezzeret? Like, I find like a lot of the creature decks, even like things like fast, like Boros, sometimes like Tezzeret, if they get a hand where like they get the Black Sun Zenith, they get a couple go for the throats, and then they can kind of play that stick the Jason control match. Like, what do you guys do for that? Like,
yeah,
you have Vengevine Recursion, but like if they don't let you get to that, yeah, by killing your Fauna Shamans and stuff.
You know what I mean? The thing that I found, like, because I actually played against, like I said, against a blue black control list, like not just Tezzeret, but like hardcore blue black control.
Yeah.
All of their stuff is designed to combat is to out control the control mirror.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So they're using cards like Duress, which are totally dead against us.
Yeah.
And they're using Spell Pierces, which are dead against us. You know, like Inquisition of Kozilek, yeah, that's probably pretty good. But
and Mana Leak.
And Mana Leak. But again, even then, you're looking at some of the mix, especially with the Tezzeret lists. They're, a lot of the counterspell suites right now are more heavily leaning on the Spell Pierce as opposed to the Mana Leak. So you kind of find, Rug might play a couple. You know, like, obviously Mana Leak is still bad, but even then, I mean, you just know to play around it. So you just cast your Vengevine and attack with it until they kill it. Then you cast another one and attack with it until they kill it. Then you play two dudes, and you can counter one all you want. It doesn't matter. Right, like until people actually play graveyard hate, the deck will still always demolish control, like always.
Mm.
But it gets out aggroed by aggro decks with removal, so it's like the whole, rock paper scissors situation. But it would rape Tezzeret decks, because Tezzeret decks, although they're really strong and they have a lot of really deep rooted synergies, they don't have as aggressive a removal suite as some of the other lists that are out there.
Yeah. Like, I was talking, do you guys remember that blue-black Tezzeret list I was talking about last week at FNM?
Yeah.
So, I was playing that, and I had a Mirran Crusader on the board, and I ended up beating him with that, with a sword on it, just luckily, and he showed me his hand, and his hand had two Doomblades, three Go for the Throats, and then, like, a Mana Leak. And he just like sat there and he like couldn't do anything. And I was thinking about your deck, and I was just like, oh my god, that would be awful. Like if somebody hit a hand like that, right? Like,
now the other thing that I did too is
kill you.
So on game day, right, I played Stoneforge package. So against blue black, I had both Sword of Body and Mind and Feast or Famine. So when I threw the Sword of Feast or Famine onto Avengevine and started swinging in, it was pretty much over after that too.
Yeah.
And I actually did end up game three milling out my opponent with Sword of Body and Mind.
That's not even that hard to do, really.
No.
I'm saying good job still, but people always like act really surprised when they say that. Like, oh man, he milled out his opponent even. And it's like, well, you think about it, like by the time you've hit them with a Sword of Body and Mind, they've probably drawn or gone through, like 15 to 20 cards. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the idea is that if you're playing, the infinite removal deck, like blue black is supposed to be, right? Then the chances that they didn't draw a Doomblade or a Disfigure, well, I guess not a Disfigure, but like a Doomblade or a Go for the Throat in how many cards did you see, right? I mean, it's tough. It can be tough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, less so against decks with fewer removal, but. Seems really good against Valakut. Made me happy when I was able to mill out like six mountains. That was really entertaining. Like, nice deck. How many of those you got left? Five? But yeah, so it's a pretty strong deck. It did really well against control. Made me happy.
Yeah. It was well placed that last meta. And I still think this week too, because like Kago still hasn't been taken down, so.
So, so Kago and Ka Blade and Ka Bolt and Esp Cargo or some shit, which is horrible. That's
and
horrible.
Concord.
cockward. But so there's a all of the decks are playing Squadron Hawk. So, you know, it seems.
Did I make that joke last week where I went into FNM and Sean Hetherington, the guy that did our spoiler cast, was like, I really like how diverse the standard format is. You can play Squadron Hawk or you can play Extended.
No, you didn't. I don't think you did.
Yeah. And then I was like, yep, pretty good. You got me. But yeah, it's like every single deck has Squadron Hawk in it, except for Tezzeret.
They're and really good.
And like, Patrick Sullivan's deck.
It's just crazy. Oh, yeah. Which is just like red deck wins because of Kago, though.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Kago and Boros. Like.
Yeah. So, anyway, so the question becomes, like, Jerry has said, you know, at first that the red splash was the way to attack the mirror. You know, anytime you can just ping off the Hawks before they get equipped seems pretty good.
Yeah.
But then again, the next question is, in order to, you know, gain some ground against some of the more aggressive builds, you can play black, which basically allows you to cut back on some of your counter magic and instead play, you know, a nice aggressive discard suite. So cards like Inquisition of Kozilek, which seems so good right now.
Yeah, really good.
With additional discard in the sideboard if you need it for the actual mirror. And yeah.
And hard removal.
Hard removal, exactly. And then you also get the sick man land, which is the Jace Killer.
Oh, yeah. Also, you don't even lose a fetch either. That's the good thing, too.
Yeah.
Like, with the splash for red, you can use, you know, four fetches, and with this, like, on-color fetches. And with the splash for black, you can, too. So that's also a bonus.
Yeah, except you can use eight in the red splash, right?
Well, what do you mean?
You can use eight fetches in the red splash.
Mm-hmm. You can?
Yeah.
Eight on-color fetches?
No.
Well, no.
Yeah. Arid Mesa, which is white-red, and then Scalding Tarn, which is blue-red.
Oh, yeah. Durr.
Word, Dirtle.
Word, Dirtle.
So what's the right one? So Jerry himself said that the black version was the best version in the house last week.
Last week, yeah.
Right. So that might not be what's right, you know, from here on out. And I don't know what he's going to be planning to play in Memphis. Probably going to brew, you know, something that will surprise us once again. For my part, I've been seeing a lot of different, very unique variations, both online and on these MTGO tournaments. Like, the one that stands out to me the most is one that just won the recent standard premiere, which is the straight blue-white version. And instead of playing Tectonic Edges, it plays Ink Moth Nexus.
But people have been saying that it should be like blue-black or blue-white control should be playing that forever. Really? Have they not? That's why the card's worth $15 instead of $5.
Has this been the standard for this long? Like,
that's all I've heard. I don't know if people have actually been doing it, but all I've heard is, like, as soon as that card came out, it was like, oh, this can go in all the control matchups because it's just as good as Tectonic Edge, except for that it kills them. Blah, blah, blah.
I think we also may have mentioned it when we
reviewed part
of the set. And but, like, the straight blue-white, like, the stock list was playing Tectonic Edges. And in the Channel Fireball tournament, LSV, who was playing the Arc Trail, the version that Scott was talking about with the red splash Cobblade, he lost to a blue-white version that played Tectonic Edges because, you know, those hurt your mana. Even though they don't have the Spark Mage advantage, they can just, like, kill all your non-basics and get the edge that way.
Now, there was also, and if my memory serves here, if I go back and I look at an article on Channel Fireball by Matt Nass, the Elf Master himself, he, in that same tournament, played a Bant version.
Right. That's correct.
Which he used to very good effectiveness, actually. And Raptor apparently endorsed it heavily. But he's basically taking 4 Cobra, 4 Mystic, 4 Fawn of Shaman, 4 Squadron Hawk, 4 Vengevine, which sounds really familiar to our list initially. But then he's got like 1 Baneslayer, 3 Jace, 2 Gideon, Basilisk Collar, Mortar Pod, Feast and Famine, 4 Preordain, and 3 Spellpierce.
That doesn't sound like the same deck at all. Like, in terms of a Cobblade deck, like, you can't.
Well, you've still got Squadron Hawk. You've still got Stoneforge Mystic. You've still got Jace. You still got Gideon. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, anyways, it seemed to have a bit, you know, a bit more aggressive capacity. You know, the sideboard looked like a bunch of misers that he could fetch up with Fauna Shaman, as well as, you know, 4 Flash Freeze, 3 Oust, you know, Divine Offering, Sun Titan, a couple more equipments and stuff. And he actually ended up just losing in the finals.
Yeah, either the finals or quarterfinals. He or the semifinals. He went pretty far with it.
Yeah. So it's interesting. He says that Stirring Wildwood is really, really good right now over Celestial Colonnade because it's cheaper to activate and you can equip it with a sword for the same cost.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So there's just so many versions. And I actually want to get back to the black version really quick because Scott mentioned it first. Like, obviously, Stirring Wildwood, you can make the same thing about Creeping Tar Pit.
Yep.
But what I felt about that deck, the black deck, is the mana is fairly tricky because there's a lot of comes into tap lands. And if you play a lot of games with the deck, you'll find that you won't be able to turn 1 Inquisition, turn 2 Stoneforge as often as you would like. Sometimes you'd have to play like the Creeping Tar Pit tapped to be able to get the Stoneforge on turn 2, and then you would be able to Inquisition, or you Inquisition and, you know, hope to top deck an untapped land. So there's a lot of I had to go through a lot of that when I've been playing with this particular version. So yeah. Obviously that's less of a problem in the more blue white list, and we've seen Shippethala, Michael Heatra, do really well with straight blue white, and he also entered the channel Fireball 5K, and apparently Tumble Magnet was a house for him against LSV, and so there's these solutions that don't require like these colors, and you have a better mana base. So it's really interesting to me. Like, I'm not gonna have time to test all these variants. Right, there's like every color has been tried, even green now, right? Like bad, so like it's I don't know what to do.
So you mean for like the TCG tournament?
Right, TCG.
What if you worked on a deck that beat Cobblade? Wouldn't that be just as good as trying to figure out a good Cobblade deck? Because it's going to be there, like in force, like it's going to be huge.
See, but the other thing you're going to see there is you're going to see. So it's going to be very similar. You're going to see a lot of Boros, right? Because it's a really strong deck right now, especially after, you know, Rietzel and a couple of the other successes. You're going to see a lot of Valakut.
Are you? I haven't seen Valakut in months here.
The thing is, man, you go to these big tournaments. You go to these big tournaments, and, and I mean, the pros have said it too. You go and you want to play the most, you know, powerful and uninteractive decks as you can.
Why? To win? Like, is that how you win?
So that you don't have to rely on, you know, your opponent making mistakes and matchups, right? So, you know, when you're playing some decks that are very finely tuned as metagame decks, you really need to be aware of what brackets that you're in and when you win and when you lose and what type of decks you're facing in those specific brackets, right? Because you may find yourself with the best deck in the room, and if you lose round one and you find yourself in the loser's bracket, you're all of a sudden no longer preying on Cobblade decks. You're fucking fighting it out amongst red deck wins all day.
And you're playing jank and shit.
Yeah. So, and I mean, but that can happen. You got to kind of keep monitoring that all throughout the tournament. So whenever you have the opportunity to, you know, and like a lot of the pros have said that too. Like, obviously, it depends on the different quality of player. Like, you're going to see a deck like Valakut be far more prevalent at something like a GP, especially in the hands of pros, than you would find it, you know, at Pro Tour Paris, for example. Like, Pro Tour Paris was all about control on control all fucking day. And the only other bad person in the room was Valakut. You know, you have the odd Boros list here and there, but like that seemed to be what it was. It was just Valakut and then control on control all day. So at this sort of thing, I would expect you're probably going to see, you know, it's not going to be the Pro Tour or Worlds level deck lists, like maybe the list, but in terms of the players. So, you know, obviously myself included, but I think that you're probably better off looking for a deck that is, unless you are a master with it, you want to find a deck that you're going to be able to pilot effectively without making too many mistakes. And I think that's going to be more relevant than making sure you have the perfect edge.
Right, Jay, that's a good point that you brought up, but Scott just brought up the reason why I'm 99.9% playing Kago or Kablade, because you guys know I've been playing it forever, and definitely
forever for like 3 weeks maybe.
No, that's dude, like KYT's deck,
dude. Yeah. That's like that's forever in card time. He's honestly been playing this deck almost like as the go-to since Kibler spoiled it at Worlds.
So that would make it roughly like
almost 6 months.
Right, right. So I've been like, this has been my main deck in like every single stand tournament. So I feel extremely comfortable with it. Obviously, it's a lot different with the Stoneforges. The game plays differently, but I feel really comfortable with this deck. And I've been talking to Kenji Samura online, and like we talk from time to time. And he accidentally entered. He thought it was a standard 8-man, but he entered a extended 8-man by accident with a Kablade deck, and he 3-0'd it. So just goes to show how powerful this strategy is. And yeah, I'm definitely like the intrinsic power of this deck is just too high. Even though there's decks that like Jesse's that would give me trouble for sure.
How funny!
So is the question then come down to do you dial it back to old school? Do you play hot new tech or do you play bleeding edge tech? And is that sort of what the question's going to come down to for you?
Right. Wait, but Scott, what do you think of this? Like in extended, people are playing like the blue white list, and they're playing Mutavolt instead of Tectonic Edge. So, do you think this Ankh-Morph Nexus deck idea is actually a great idea, or
no?
It's also weak against opposing Tectonic Edges. So I'm wondering, but then it can equip a sword. You only need like with a sword in play.
Here's the thing, man. Like Ankh-Morph Nexus, here's the thing to consider. If you plan on Boros being your big time baddie, right?
Right.
Then Ankh-Morph Nexus is sick because you block and you profitably kill like steplings all day.
And okay? Yeah.
So the -1/-1 counters are relevant. It's one of the reasons why I really like our Viridian Corruptors in the sideboard, because at the word like they're no matter what they're trading with, they're leaving their mark, you know. And so that's what's really sick about the Ankh-Morph Nexus. More so, I think, than actually killing somebody with poison. So it's that you've got a land that effectively. I mean, sure, it's another win condition, but
right.
Any man land is a win condition.
Well, this guy would be like the cheapest, right, of them all. Like you have a sword, all you need is 4 mana to get Feast of Famine and untap, play a Planeswalker or something. Get them to discard.
Well, that's the other thing, right? Like so, with 4 mana, you give them 4 poison counters. They discard a card, and then you play Jace.
Right.
Here's the thing. If you're going to play the blue-white version, and you're going to use Tummel Magnets and Ankh-Morph Nexus, I can see there being room for, you know, a Contagion Clasp or two, or fucking, like, Mizing a Contagion Engine. Because honestly, hold on. Because sometimes you just fucking get there. Right? Yeah. But like, if you wanted to kind of, like, shoehorn in the sub-theme, then it would totally be sick. Or fucking play Thrumming Bird alongside your Squadron Hawks. That card's legit.
No, it isn't. I think Scott's trolling us.
Right.
Listen, Ali Antrazi would beg to differ.
Ugh.
Chances of me facing a Valakut player that drops Horizon Spellbomb at the TCG player.
Well, if I make it.
The percentage increases, but back to Kablade. The first deck I really want to test is this version because it feels because it just won the most recent Premier Online and the guy just 4-0'd another daily. So definitely I'm gonna give this a try and tweet about whether it's good or not. And I won't be able to be here for the next cast if we actually if we leave on Thursday. So.
Yeah.
Scott, which one, like, if someone were to put a gun to your head and you had to select a version right now to play, which one attracts you the most? Or you could just say play Jesse's deck.
Well, see, it's tough. Like, I've always been really good with, and I'm not trying to, like, toot the horn or nothing, but, you know, I've played a lot of Esper in my time, like, a lot of Esper. And so I've got a fairly good understanding of, you know, what are okay cards to keep, my Esper mana base that I've got built is pretty solid right now for, you know, a fun Esper deck that I've got with Tezzeret and Venser. But the mana base is fucking awesome. I've never had any problems with them. It's just, it's a matter of sequencing and mulliganing correctly. So I mean, I like the hard removal. I like being able to, you know, if we wanted to play Grave Titan out of the board or, you know, Miser or whatever, because he's really good against Boros. You know, so I, or aggro decks in general, like he's really good right now. I like Doomblade. I still like Doomblade over Go for the Throat personally, but Disfigure is also potentially really good. So there's, black has a lot of really nice answers, and I think they're a bit more resilient than the answers you're getting out of the red deck, even though you may be getting more initial perceived value out of the answers in the red deck. Like, am I making sense here? Like, Arc Trail is almost always a 2-for-1, and it's a fucking blowout. That card is amazing. But
Inquisition is more so, I think.
Inquisition, yeah. I'm telling you, like, Inquisition pulling a Squadron Hawk is a 4-for-1. I don't know if anyone told you.
No.
You know? So, I mean, so personally, if it were me, I'd probably look at the black deck as the place to start. But, again, only because I know I've, to your point of experience, I have a lot of experience with the Esper mana base, and I'd feel comfortable in being able to manage it properly. But that's me.
Are you going to play, oh, that's the techie card they had, Ben Lundquist, Geth? From the sideboard.
God, that card is ridiculous. Nice sword, yoink. Yeah, I play the shit out of Geth in EDH, so yeah, I love that dude. He's big.
That just seems like so expensive, though.
Yeah, that's what Jerry thought, too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, we're not on fucking rogue deck building cast, right? This is the A-team here.
I
we gotta
honestly...
Have some kind of, like, we gotta have some kind of standard here.
I like red decks. I have
fucking
to tell you,
putting Geth into Kaw, Black Blade.
If I've got to pick a six drop that I'm going to put in, if I had to pick a six drop I'm going to put into that deck, it's Grave Titan. It's
or even Sun Titan.
Yeah, it'd still be Grave Titan. Like,
really?
Sun Titan, yeah. Sun
Instead
Titan
of getting
was,
your swords and your hawks and everything
Sun,
back?
Sun Titan is absolutely awesome as the mirror tech in the straight blue-white list.
But isn't every single deck packing sword hate right now?
Right.
So then, like, wouldn't playing Sun Titan be better just to get your swords back, and
yeah,
your cause?
It was Sun Titan's shit against Boros.
Why?
Because they journey it and it leaves nothing behind.
I guess, except for the sword it got back.
Yeah, but yes. But it doesn't. Like... Anyways,
I think six mana cards in general are just bad. I think that's would be my point.
So is the comment then, like, are we proud of ourselves now as a community for getting away from Battlecruiser Magic and playing cards that are
Battlecruiser Magic, that is the best reference ever on the cast.
Let's make a format called Battlecruiser Magic.
I can't take credit for this, guys. This is 100% YoMTG Taps. They're like, yeah, this is standard is awesome. You can play any Titan you want.
Oh, yeah, right. I remember that.
Anyways, yeah, I would play black right now. Even though the red answers are arguably wider range, it's totally black. Totally black. Because once you go black, you never go back, right? That's what they say?
Yeah.
I think the trouble I had, and maybe there's a quick discussion on the mono red deck that took the whole event, made by Patrick Sullivan. And, you know, I tested a few games, and maybe it's because I haven't played against a black mono red deck in a long time. I struggled to really beat it, to have, especially game one, to have a huge win percentage against that. I think he made his deck to be able to, at least in his article, he felt he had one of the best, if not the best deck in the room. And
don't we see this every time a meta gets kind of established, though? Like,
right.
Don't we see red deck wins come out of the woodwork every time that there's a
deck?
Like,
and then we sort of adjust with Core Firewalkers, and then
yeah.
They sort of like die. And it's like a cycle. But the Core Firewalkers, it feels like... I remember when it came out, it was like the nuts. It was in every sideboard. But it's not played in any sideboard right... Well, maybe after this win. Is it played in Boros? Like in the...
I played it in Boros.
Okay.
It's like the nut for the mirror. It's like dropping a Phyrexian Crusader.
Oh, yeah. Right. And then like
Yeah, right. Like they actually, and like, or the other thing too is you just pyroclasm, like you just equip or drop a land and then pyroclasm, right?
Right.
And you have five guys and they have none guys. And none guys is a bad number we get.
You have a sea of dudes on your side.
You have a sea of dudes.
So I'm looking at some of the lists from the Standard Daily today. And like somebody's playing 3 Elspeth Terrell in Boros.
Ugh.
That's awk.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Although someone last weekend was running like for a higher end Boros deck. I forget his name.
LSV played the blue black Tezzeret list.
Well, that's because
the combo one.
You know why, right? I think he asked.
What's the combo one?
The Juza list that I've been
he asked on Twitter. What
with Forge Master.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's what they picked.
That's what they picked. But Jesse wanted him to pick his list,
and he just laughed.
No, he said it was cool, but everyone on Facebook was wanting to see Tezzeret.
But like no. at first he just replied with ha 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 ha.
Well, you took it negatively. I took it positively.
Oh, like a grandpa laugh, like a chuckle.
140 characters of ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
Directed at Jesse. So I don't know if I should be packing Core Firewalkers because I'm actually scared of Mono Red. And I wonder if the TCG metagame, but because the Montreal metagame, if it was Montreal, you know, there'd be a lot of Mono Red.
Yeah.
Yeah, like even if it's a tier 2 deck, it's either the second or third most popular archetype of the tournament, as I've been, you know, getting deck lists from the tournament organizers now.
Yeah.
Tabulating and just going mono red. It's quite surprising.
So is it time for Leyline of Sanctity to make a comeback then, or what?
Oh, the Scott one of Scott's favorite cards.
Well, is it? Like, I mean, Valakut's still, you know, they're rough to it, right? A lot of people right now are playing more artifact focused hate than they are playing enchantment focused hate. And it's really good against discard.
That does turn Ember Hauler into a 2/2 bear.
and nice Searing Blaze you got there.
That you can't actually play.
That's right.
Sounds like some sick tech. Ooh.
Just saying.
No.
Could come back.
Still no.
Okay, I gotta ask Jay because Scott's going through the deck list. In the top 8 of the premiere, there's this new Valakut list, and I've talked to the MTJO player earlier in the week about his list, and he thinks it's actually really solid. This idea against the field, but it's weak against the mirror. A playset of Cyclops Gladiators.
A playset of Cyclops Gladiator.
Cyclops Gladiator is a 4/4 for 4.
Yeah, 3 red and 1.
That reads...
Attack Arena is what it reads.
No, I don't know what that means. Just say it in English for some of the people that use Horizon Spellbomb here.
So when you declare Cyclops Gladiator... I'm going by memory here. But when you declare Cyclops Gladiator as an attacker, you select target creature, whatever. Cyclops Glad... Those two creatures basically deal damage to each other before blockers are declared.
Right.
The idea is that this guy fucking eats walls for breakfast.
And I guess Titan? No, not Titan. No.
Wait, no, because then he just dies.
Well, but you bolt it afterwards or something. I don't know. I guess.
Yeah. Or you kind of eat a couple little guys through. Yeah. You know, yeah.
It eats all the birds.
I don't know.
You have a sword.
I think
like,
that's
you have a sword.
Stupid.
Yeah.
Is it like you just against it's? It seems. These probably
a playset of these.
Well, against
Valakut, which doesn't play a whole lot of red sources early enough to matter anyway.
I go, well, maybe this guy plays some really crazy lists, but...
Because Valakut isn't playing that, right? Valakut's playing forests at the beginning, right? Right? Like, it wants to play forests so it can ramp. It doesn't want to play fucking...
Well, this
doesn't
want to
play
really
fucking a bunch of mountains so that it can play a fucking Cyclops.
This version actually plays, like, 2 Arid Mesas as well, which I've never seen in a Valakut list, so... And then obviously it has Lotus Cobras, so to get you there to have that triple red, and I don't
know. That's awful.
Well, it seems scary if I just have like a Stoneforge Mystic, right? I equip the sword and it's like attack, you know.
Yeah.
Every guy, like even equipped a bird is a 3/3. This guy's a 4/4, so he just kills all my guys by himself.
Well, I guess so. Like I guess in that regard, but then I don't know. So do lightning bolts. Like. I don't know. Like,
still on the board and just like killing my dudes.
This
my
sounds awful. Dudes.
It's gonna kill all my guys.
It's gonna kill your sea of dudes.
So can we talk about homeless tech real quick?
Yeah, yeah. I think we are.
Yeah. No. This is really bad. Okay.
It's worse than this.
Yeah. Standard Daily, March 10th. KK McCaskey. Okay. Now, in all fairness, 3-1 to Standard Daily, so not terrible, but with a mono white control list. So,
hey, yeah. Remember when we watched Jesse's video on that?
Nah. So 4 Emiria, the Sky Ruin, 17 Planes, 2 Tech Edge, 23 Land, 3 Archon of Redemption, 2 Baneslayer Angel, 4 Core Cartographer, 2 Core Sanctifiers, 3 Pilgrim's Eye, 2 Sun Titan, 3 Sunblast Angel, 4 Wall of Omens, 2 War Priest of Thune, and those are the dudes. Then you're at a 2 Ajani Goldmane, 3 Day, 1 Elspeth, 2 Journey to Nowhere, 1 Phyrexian Rebirth, which is that new, like, Wrath make a dude, and 3 Survival Cash, which is gain 2 life, draw a card, if you have more life than your opponent, rebound. Sideboard is fucking like Hate Bear Tech Central. 3 Devout Lightcaster, 2 Journey to Nowhere, 3 Core Firewalker. There's your Firewalker KYT, which is what made this stand out to me. 2 Core Sanctifiers, 3 Phyrexian Revoker. Nice Gideon you got there. Jace, what? 1 Tectonic Edge, which I love in the fucking one land in the board for the control matches. It's amazing. And Pyromancer's Ascension can suck the big one. Sorry, Flores. But 1 Kozilek Butcher of Truth in the sideboard.
Oh my god.
What? Archon of Redemption in the main?
Yo, well, Archon,
isn't that like an M11 fucking sealed card?
So it's Archon of Redemption. I'm going to gather it up right now. So it's 2 white and 3, okay? For a 3/4 flying.
2 white and 3. Yeah,
5 mana.
5 mana for a 3/4 flyer. Whenever him or another creature with flying enters the battlefield under your control, you may gain life equal to that creature's power.
Oh my god.
So the flying dudes in the deck are Pilgrim's Eye, Sunblast Angel, Baneslayer Angel, and the Archons themselves. But you clearly have some sort of like Emiria the Sky Ruin and Sun Titan shenanigans that you can use to get more dudes.
So more I imagine dudes. This just rapes aggro.
I would think so. This has got to be like Soul Sisters on that doesn't play cards that suck.
Yeah. I like Mono White Control. The only reason it wasn't viable was Volokut.
Yeah. It's funny as hell.
Can this be Cobblade?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Like, until the new sword comes out, like, this doesn't seem totally terrible.
See, okay, let's talk about that. Let's just get away from this homeless tech. Thank you, Billy Marino, for plugging that.
Maybe this is who Billy Marino is.
he finally got an MTGO account. Let's talk about the new sword. We know it's going to be red and white. We're trying to play the game called Name the Sword.
War and Peace.
War and Peace, sure, maybe. That's, I don't know. That sounds pretty good. Bad.
Bad or badass?
I think it sounds I don't think it sounds great, but it sounds right to me. Like it's probably gonna be it. Right.
Really?
Yeah.
But wait a minute. So we have Body and Mind and Feast and Famine, and then War and Peace.
Sword of War and Peace. Yeah.
I don't think so, and I hope that's not what it is. But anyway, so let's say that's what it is for some reason. Okay, and it does whatever it does. The point is every deck just gonna turn into 3 sword dot deck? Because this deck hose like this, the Prot White Prot Red will hose Boros, right? But then it'll also hose like Cobblade theoretically, and make it better, right? And you put this sword in Boros for the mirror, and it just makes it crazy. Plus, it saves your guys from Pyroclasm.
Nah.
Like I don't know, so I don't know like if it's better or not. Like I don't know like what's gonna happen. What's the meta gonna? You know what I mean? Where's it gonna go? Where's it gonna go, Jesse? President of Meta Tech.
Is this meta
it's soon the meta isn't gonna change until a deck clearly dominates Cobblade, and then Volokut will take back over. That's my prediction.
So where was
this
confirmed?
The Jesse prediction?
Guys, where was this confirmed that this new sword was gonna be in the last set?
They said they were going to finish the cycle in this block.
Oh.
And Mark Rosewater has tweeted, I believe, or maybe Aaron Forsyth, has tweeted that it's a red white sword in the third lock, or it was in a daily article or something like
right.
that.
Well, they did all the color combinations, right? So fire and ice is red and blue.
But not even like just smart, good detective work. I'm sure positive.
Oh, they've said it.
I've read it from a magic employee.
Okay.
Is what I'm saying. So like yes, like we did all the speculation, and then I think what happened is eventually it had to get confirmed, and it might have been at that thing. What was that thing that Mark Rosewater and all those guys did a panel at like
Con? They did the IRC chats or something.
Yeah, or something like that. No, but this was the real one, I thought, and they were at like a Comic Con in like San Francisco or Los Angeles or something like that. Didn't that happen like a little while ago in the summer maybe? Or before this set came out, I mean, rather. Am I high?
Maybe.
Random segment train.
Right, but the sword would be so sick. Like, pro white, pro red is just like exact. If the abilities aren't too crappy, it's like exactly what I would want to beat the mirror and Boros.
The other thing is that you got to think about the abilities. So they're probably not going to make it shock for the red ability because they already have that, right? Yeah. And then they already have white gain you 3 life.
Right.
And then is there another white sword? Like is there 2 white swords?
No, right.
So they have it. So then they could do what? Like some kind of recursion maybe. They could do something like an oust or an excommunicate, right? They could do something really awful, like destroy target artifact or enchantment.
They could do tap a creature it doesn't untap during the next untap.
They could. Yeah. I feel that that's more of a blue effect that they're doing right now.
Yeah, it would be like a pseudo Frost Titan.
Yeah.
But Hookmaster does.
that's the only card, right? Like in the last couple sets, they've printed like Wall of Frost, Sleep, Frost Titan, and then like Bonds of Quicksilver, and the other like there's like 3 auras they've printed that do the tap thing. Whereas with white, it's only been 1 card, right? I just feel that it would be more of a blue ability.
Okay.
And then like with red, like they could do what? Like destroy target non-basic land or smash.
Oh, Relentless Assault. Come on, you know they want to do it. You know they want to put Relentless Assault on that sword. Fucking, are you serious?
Yeah.
How long have you been playing this game? Man,
Horizon Spellbomb.
Oh my god. World at War?
Okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah, without the rebound.
Right. That would be way too broken.
Well, if it was Stone Rain, it'd be way so freaking crazy.
But not maybe not Stone Rain. What if it was non-basic? Yeah. Oh, they don't want to. Oh, really? Fuck that. That'd be hot.
Non-basic? Oh.
Yeah.
And no, then, that'd be retarded also. That'd be so
imagine,
sick.
Okay, could you imagine this? Like, it's let's say it's excommunicate and non-basic, right?
Man, that's too sick. I'd order ten of them.
That's too sick also, right?
I'd order 10 of them.
I think one of the abilities has to be amazing, and then the other one has to be kind of okay, or they're both going to be fine. Like, sort of feast or famine, right? Like, the untapping the lands is fucking bonkers. Discarding a card is fine.
It's just me.
Well, it's good, but it's fine, right? Like, Sword of Body and Mind, a 2-2 dude for free is fine, especially when you consider that you can then just equip the sword to
the
dude.
I actually prefer the wolf to the mill ability.
Yeah, milling 10 is very relevant in a lot of matchups.
Yeah, I just like
positively or negatively.
I like having a blocker, a 5/5 blocker,
mm-hmm.
with protection from 2 colors.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But yeah, like so, I'm trying to figure out what the sword does.
Man, like, you know. the version we talked about would be so bonkers.
Maybe they brought back Lightning Bolt this year. Maybe they're gonna take it out in M12 and they'll put it on a sword.
Put what on a sword?
Bolt.
Yeah, they'll make a creature though.
Well, fucking still. I'll order 10 of them.
80 minimum.
I'll have 80 minimum. I'll order 10 of them. I'll be like, I bought 10 of them for $200. Say hello to my $800, John Medina. What?
What?
Man, that oust-like ability I mentioned would be so sick. It's like a guy plays Overgrown Battlement. You have this on a bird.
Oh, and just like oust and kill your fucking manland. Suck my bag. You're lost in my sea of dudes.
That's awesome.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head that would make. It's probably much less broken.
Yeah.
then yeah.
Like it'll probably be something like destroy, like it'll probably be a crush effect because it's an artifact block. So they can cop out and easily make that a relevant ability, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then the white ability, like, see, the other thing is right now in this block, white also has crush effects.
Right.
Right? So they could make it like maybe the red would be something else, but the white would be like divine offering effect, right? Destroy the artifact, gain the life. I don't know. Like, I don't, it's pretty open, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to, I'm trying to think outside the box and see where it would fit with, like, established red-white cards that are out right now. Mm-hmm. Right? Because that's where you got to think about it, right? Because you got to remember, these guys played with these cards 2 years ago. So they're going to design cards that interact well with other cards, right?
Yeah. It's going to be bonkers, whatever it ends up coming out as.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty sick.
That seems to be where they've headed. Like, I think when they made the original, like, set of swords, like, some of the swords weren't even, like, they didn't even compare close to, like, the blue-red one.
Yeah.
Like, the black-white one was, like, okay compared to the blue-red one.
Yeah, no, and it was, and it also depends on the format, too, right? Like, when you're talking about standard, yeah, it was definitely the blue red one.
Was it
a ton of play?
What's even
Fire and Ice? Fire and Ice and Light and Shadow. Yeah, and Light and Shadow is great for like casual and EDH and stuff like that. Card's bonkers.
Yeah, it is.
And it's in my opinion far superior to Fire and Ice as it pertains to like EDH and casual stuff because the raise dead and the gain life is often more relevant, especially in the decks that you're building it around with.
But like drawing two cards. Dealing damage is
it's one card, right? Because only draw it's two damage one.
That's
card.
What I meant. Yeah. And then like the protection abilities are good too, right? Like with like just for balance countering or not countering, sorry, balance and like freezing and then like the red abilities like protection from all direct damage, like that's just crazy.
Right.
So I'd like to just also can we make a quick comment here since it's like after midnight on all the Friday stuff is up now. They put up new artwork on the Mirren site and the Phyrexian site, like new wallpapers for two of the new cards from the next set. And one of them is called Pure Steel Paladin, which looks really bonkers. And the one that's really awesome is Elesh Norn Grand Cenobite. And I know that Jeff Rhythmic on Twitter put this up for us earlier today. And I got to tell you, like the artwork that's coming out of these... out of Wizards right now, especially with this set and the flavor, is fucking unreal.
This set's... I like this set a lot, actually.
Yeah. From a flavor standpoint with art, it's so good. And I imagine this next one's going to be just even further.
And I fucking hated Alara art. I did not like it at all. Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, everybody went quiet. Like I said, like a racial slur.
I have to go play my cello.
Oh man, that's Garrick.
What?
Oh, there's all these planeswalkers. There's a new wallpaper with all the planeswalkers. Really? And they look pretty sick. Garrick looks pretty badass.
Oh, so I got a buddy of mine that's actually at PAX right now. Yeah,
PAX.
That is pretty
What's
badass.
PAX?
The Penny Arcade Expo.
Oh.
But there's all sorts of like badass magic stuff that goes on there. Yeah, Garrick looks pretty big. Anyways, so that's that. So I guess, do we want to talk about anything else here? Like, where are we at for time, guys? Like, any cards that we foresee bursting onto the scene in Memphis this weekend?
I was thinking about this earlier, obviously. I should hope so,
since it was your fucking idea.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what those cards were. I honestly like feel like we're gonna see more Titans than we're used to. Like probably Grave, if I had to pick, he'll kind of make a comeback. And if anyone's really brewing outside of the box, I think Abyssal Persecutor is actually fairly decent right now.
I had to play a deck with those in it at FNM, and it like just fucking raped me.
Yeah, he's because
of Go
like,
for the Throat.
Well, I built a fun little, like, just straight black-white. It's kind of like a Kago deck, but it's just black-white with, like, tons of hand disruption and ton of removal, and then just, like, Graves and Abyssals. It just curves out really well, and every time I dropped Abyssal, I seem to win.
Yeah. Well, and then like with the bounce effects of Jason, et cetera, and then like with Go for the Throat, even like you just get extra like ways to kill him. Right?
Like, yeah, yeah. Like Go for the Throat was the key to like making him a lot more playable, in my opinion.
Yeah, the other thing is now you don't have to play Gatekeeper.
If you're
playing blue, black, or something else, or white, black, right? Now you don't have to play Gatekeeper, which is notoriously hard to play if you're not playing mono.
Exactly. And like in the list, I didn't run him. I did run a couple Consuming Vapors because I think that card's actually fairly well placed right now. Like it's better than it has been.
I saw a lot of Consuming Vapors in lots of different decks, and it was like surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I just think black is still underrated. I just feel like it's on the verge of being like actually more played. It's like more of a mono or like a black with a support color. And I mean, if anyone listened to me, a Johnny Goldmane, I think, would make an appearance in these aggro decks that counter Kago. So Abyssal like would have to be one card that I really think we could see coming out. And yeah, that's all I can think of off the top of my head. If you give me a couple more minutes, I could think of some more because I had some earlier.
I got a question for you. So we're talking about a Johnny Goldmane so much. What do you think of him in Boros?
He's too slow in Boros, and I don't think you quite fill up the board enough in like a meta with 4 days and Gideons.
Well, because like the discussion is like for the like they're trying to find the perfect planeswalker for Boros, right? So you have right now it's Koth or Hero of Oxid Ridge, really, and then people are still trying, and like I'm still willing to test if I can ever get testing in Gideon, because he's a blowout, right?
Yeah, I mean, like if you kind of want to go more mid range Boros, you know what? Now that you mention it though, and thinking about it for a second, a Johnny actually kind of fits in Boros, because if you think about it. When you throw in like a Hero of Oxid Ridge, you're getting 4 haste damage out of it.
Yeah.
But he's a lot more vulnerable to dying. Well, a Johnny is going to give you 4 power. I mean, well, I guess Hero can swing more for like 7 because of the battle cry. But a Johnny like instantly gives your guys like all +1/+1. So you're looking at like 3 or 4 right off the bat. But then you get to leave him up on defense. So like you get to be aggressive while not sacrificing like the win on the return attack.
The other thing I was thinking is it would just make your, like, you wouldn't have to be so many, like, all or nothing alpha strike situations. Like, I find a lot of the time in Boros, if you don't have the land, like, let's say you've gotten them down to, like, 3 life or 2 life or 4 life, but you don't have the fetch, and then you're looking at a bunch of Steplinkses and Geopedes, and they've been able to, like, stabilize, you're now playing top deck wars. Because you have X1s, and they're just going to be able to like blow it out or kill it, or they stick like a Necropede from the board, or like something with -1/-1 counters, like Black Sun Zenith just hoses that deck, right? But if you had like if you could make your Geopedes 2/2s even,
like and their first strike, it's relevant, right?
like and then like with Gideon too, the thing with Gideon that like makes him so good is all your creatures have to attack him, and but all your creatures are power 1 or 2 or 0, right? If you don't have a fetch, and then it's like, well, do you want to waste a fetch to kill a Gideon? Then you have to, and hopefully they don't stick another Gideon, right?
Yeah.
Whereas at least if it was like 2/2 or 3/3, like you could kill that Gideon, right?
Sure.
Like and he's a 4 Gideon drop, right?
Gideon?
No. Like a Johnny's a 4
Johnny.
Drop.
Yeah. A Johnny's so reasonable at 4.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know. Like, is that the hot secret tech for maybe Memphis or for TCG Toronto?
That's something that I feel it's worth a try testing.
Listen to this.
As an Oxid Ridge replacement, because effectively he's doing a similar thing, but it's almost better in a sense because you're right. Like you can't tap out on Boros sometimes. I don't know.
Okay, I think the only I'll chime in real quick here. The only time where I think you're 100% right is that. You know, with that as a replacement, like a full replacement, like a lot of some, like Jay, you're playing 4/4 Oxid Ridge.
Yeah.
You're probably okay to go 2/2.
I would probably play Johnny in the board. I probably wouldn't play him main.
Okay. Well, I feel like in the aggro matchup, like in the aggro mirror, he's probably really good. Without question, because you're outclassing your guys, you know, back and forth. Gideon's probably equally good. because you basically create alpha strike situations. But I think that a Johnny has another angle where it can gain you the life if you need it. And, you know, I mean, your guy's going back and forth, plus he's lower on the curve, right?
Yeah.
And so, he works really well with the Goblin, blank in the name. Not Goblin well, Guide, but Frick, what the hell is that guy's name?
The War Caller?
The one that does damage when you tap two red and a colorless.
Spike Shot Elder.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It works. It's got some synergy there, too. So.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't know. Did I break the format?
I can't. Like when Jesse said, you're right, those two.
That has never happened on the cast ever.
Never.
I think what was really awesome about that was that Jesse was like, you know, I think that needs more testing instead of like, oh my God, you just broke the format.
I'm a that's test, never happened. I don't talk on my ass. I test these things.
But we're just saying you didn't touch your penis immediately, which is not normal for you.
I was actually touching my penis just because I like having my hand out my pants right there. Not anything sexual, just so y'all know.
So any other cards that you think are going to see some play? Other cards.
Johnny.
Okay.
I'm right.
So I got a couple ideas real quick, right, if you don't mind. So I was looking at some of the lists there in Standard, and I think that Necropede is actually a hell of a lot better than we're giving you credit for, especially as it pertains to winning the Boros Mirror. You know, being able to -1/-1 counter Steplinks and Geopedes is probably a really big key, because you can just chump no matter what sword is on them, because they fucking are colorless artifact dudes.
This weekend at game day, I had to play against a Infect deck that had Necropedes, and it actually was quite a problem for my Boros deck. He can even kill Oxid Ridge, right? Like, he can kill... It can kill every creature in the deck.
Yeah. It'll profitably trade with a 2/2.
Yeah.
Or it just blocks and then toasts your pump dudes. So it's pretty sweet. So I'm actually going to be looking at that, I think, Jesse, in green-white sideboard tech, because that's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
Yeah, and then the other one that I think is a bit overdue for some love, and we may not see too much until the next set or until, you know, we kind of establish something else here, but I got to tell you, Venser the Sojourner, I don't know if you're aware of this, but blinking living weapons is really good.
Why?
Because you get the thing back.
But you kill the guy.
Yeah,
but... after they're dead?
After they're dead, of course.
Of course.
But I'm just saying, you get to remake dudes. And the other thing that's really good about Venser right now as well is people forget that he can make your guys unblockable. And
yeah, they
it
do.
Seems to be really relevant when you're dealing with a lot of swords that are kicking around.
Yeah,
so,
that's true too. Ooh.
So he's, I mean, he may not see his time in the sun until Gideon rotates, because, you know, clearly you've got some other really good options at the
or
five
a Johnny.
Slot. Yeah, but he's a four slot. But all I'm saying is that, like, at the five drop slot, once the competition dies out a little, I think you'll see Venser climbing to the top of the list pretty quick, because he's got some really gross synergies with some already innately good control strategies.
So, Jesse, why don't you work on like a blue white aggro list with swords and Venser? I already know like four of the cards in there.
It's well, first of all, I don't think Venser's good, but and second of all, that's
been
done.
Scotty? Did you hear that, Scotty?
Yeah. Oh, I've heard it.
I've tried it. I mean, I know Scotty's been trying it forever. I've tried it. It just never feels powerful enough. I think he's best in like a Bant mid-range deck, like the one that you were talking. Who was it? Tarmotel was playing.
Matt Nass, but yeah.
Oh, Matt Nass, whoever. because I mean, like actually being able to use all his abilities relevantly seems good. Like, yeah. Just blinking to draw a card seems too slow right now. I don't know.
Where I've got him, like, I've got, like I said, I've got my Esper Jank build, which is really funny, but the more and more that I throw it up against stuff, I realize that everything except for Boros just loses to it, so it's kind of humorous. But, like, being able to make, you know, because it plays the Forge Master package, so being able to, like, blink Tumble Magnets all day is really good. You know, Ichor Wellsprings in a pinch if you need to, but what's really, really exciting is after you tinker for the Blightsteel Colossus and you make it unblockable, that's really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got fun interactions.
Janky, So
I like unblockable swords, though. That's fucking crazy.
KYT, do you have any cards that you think could be sleepers or?
Nope.
No. You're just waiting for Jerry or Brian to give you some love.
That's what I was gonna say.
I'm giving you love right here, right now, bro. Get excited, son.
I think Edison. What happened in the Star City Games DC and what happened in Edison was there wasn't that much new tech, and that's what's I expect to happen for Memphis. There won't be that much that will come out.
I really wish people would listen to me and try this deck, because if there were 10 people playing my deck, I guarantee you at least one would top 16 with a good chance at top 8. It's just well positioned and it wins games, but
dude, I hear you. I'm behind you 100%. I've got, you know, two decks conceivably I'll be running for TCG, and one of them is very much a green white bench fine list. So
yeah, we'll see what happens this weekend. I'm looking forward to it as usual.
Agreed.
Mad Star City props, man. This fucking series is so good for the game. Eventually it's going to force Wizards to do more with what they've got going on as far as money and coverage.
Or less. And just make it all third-party tournaments.
I disagree. Like, people like Jerry have already just started busting the Star Cities and, you know, ignoring some GPs that are kind of out of the way.
But that's what I'm saying. So, like, instead of investing money and time and resources on GPs, what they could do is they could just outsource their tournaments altogether and just do like sponsors and prize support.
Yeah, they'd have to incorporate what they're doing, like in giving like a third party full control of it, which I'm not sure they'd want to do.
Yeah,
who knows? I mean, yeah, shit's gonna change big in the next year and two as far as like tournaments and structures go, for sure.
Yeah, it just seems like there's a big tournament every single weekend.
There is right now, and that's why I love Star City, because it's fantastic. Like, I have to work Saturdays right now, and it's awesome. So next time I buy singles on the internet, which is never, because I buy them locally.
I laugh, but unfortunately, I'm the same.
Yeah.
But and Legacy is getting more popular. Like, I'm getting really into it. And
you know what, KYT? Fuck you. You have a whole other podcast for that.
Yeah, don't bring that shit up here.
I'm like, go crazy on you, playa.
I'll fuck you.
No, I just wanted to briefly mention, like, it's really helping the game. I mean, and those EDH decks that are coming out, you know, that's going to get me an EDH, Jay, even though it pisses you off.
Yeah, because you're going to spend fucking $40 on a deck that comes with, like, five Divine Offering effects and fucking... Well,
it's going to be good, man, because I'm telling you, like, KYT, you're going to be able to get some EDH in this weekend.
Oh, right. Sweet.
We can expose you to the format.
And I've got that green deck for you.
Oh, yes, Silvos.
Fucking crazy beats. And it's got three swords in it now.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, my, that deck is sick. That deck's pretty damn sick.
It is sick, nice. Dude. It is sick. It's my pride and joy.
Yeah, but it's going to be interesting. There's rumors, of course, that they're going to either A, fix the dual lands in those commander decks create new dual lands.
Oh, yeah. No, like they won't do that.
Like shock lands that are fixed sort of thing. And here's the thing, man. Like, even if they brought in, like in those decks, if they made dual lands that came into play tapped but literally counted as their types...
Yeah.
I think that'd be sick, because that's one of the main things that's... Yeah, because the mana fixing could get easy. I mean, in Legacy, you know, it'd just be better. I think we can pretty much guarantee, though, that we're going to see, you know, the wedge tri-lands.
Of course.
Yeah, so it's going to be pretty sick.
I'm not excited for them still. Fuck those decks. Bring me some fucking Plane Chase, goddammit.
So, you guys got anything else to say, or we want to move on to shoutouts?
Well, we didn't cover your horrible fetching monstrosity, and we'll save that until later. We'll save you the public humiliation.
Yeah.
I'm just cutting you out of. Don't defend yourself.
Sounds
good. It's gonna take another cast.
It'll take a whole. It, honestly, think about how badly we ripped on Medina for fucking playing Destructive Force badly. You just don't even want to open that ball of wax.
Yeah.
It to say that in that situation, you may have made what seemed to be the right play based on your justification, but your normal traditional line of play, if you take the 9 times out of 10 situation, you made the wrong play. But anyways, fine.
We also didn't talk about the fact that you ripped that guy's deck off.
Yeah. No, we... Oh, fuck, don't even start. That made me just as angry as it did Jesse, because yeah. all I fucking heard about was this deck.
Because guys are thieves
days.
And you got caught? Yeah. I'd be mad, too. I would be angry about that also.
Out of all the people I emailed, I don't know. I think it's just like... That was just like the natural progression of what beats Cobblade, and you know, great minds think alike. It was awesome. Yeah. I was glad to see that. I wanted it to top 8, so I'd be like justify myself a little more to people, despite like not anyone running my specific deck. But word, yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that other conversation, by the way, about the type play and the fetch land and all that. So well, that's something to look forward to next time for sure.
Awesome.
Well, that's good, because hopefully the next time we cast, or well, the next time we all get together, we'll have TCG stories. And so KYT and I, and hopefully Jay, we can talk about how, you know, the plays that we made and where we could have made optimal ones. And
you
I
guys
next
can
week,
talk about that.
Well, I think what we'll do next week is
how
KYT.
I won the whole damn thing. That's what we're going to talk
that's right.
about.
we'll release some awesome footage, and like I think there's plans to do like some of the B team members are going to be at the event and stuff. So like we're going to get some crazy action.
Jay, you have to come to meet choreographers, so you know that he's not like so you know how awesome he is. this guy's legit.
So, anyways, we'll figure it all out. But you know, it's going to be a good time. So next week you can expect to hear all about our exploits and what we're doing there, and we'll have some fun doing it too. Because I won't accept just this little interview here, interview there. Because it's going to be a fun fucking time next week, man. I'll tell you.
Shout outs. I'll start. My first is going to go to actually the Beamy man, Robert Martin. I've been really busy, so I haven't been able to listen to like a lot of podcasts or anything. But today I did download his interview with Tom Martell, and I've listened to a couple of those now, and that series is really good. Like, he's done a really good job with those. He is an excellent interviewer, and he gets a lot out of people, and it's just super interesting. So, and Tom Martell was a good guest, so I like that one. And then the big shout out of the week is to Sandy Dog MTG, who I've been pretty good buds with online now, trying to like get to know some of the better players. And he plays second in Mox Season 2, which unfortunately you only get like 50 booster packs, which, you know, that's fine. But first place gets an invite to Worlds, invite to the Mox Worlds Championship, and like 80 packs or something. So the cut is just huge. But for whatever reason, Watsy got a hold of him, and he copy and pasted the message to me and gave him an invite to Worlds. So he is
for
going,
what?
Man.
Why?
He's been working hard on it.
That's awesome.
Either the other guy backed out, couldn't make it, or they just wanted to extend an invite to him. Like, he's very, very active on Moto. He's always placing in premieres and dailies, and he's a cool guy. So I'm happy for him, and I look forward to meeting him. Yeah, I look forward to meeting him and a million other people at Worlds. November can't get here soon enough.
Nice.
I'd like to give shout-outs to my sea of dudes that are out there that support me.
Your knuckle children.
You know, the next time you say sea of dudes, I'm going to ask you for royalties. You know that, right?
Yeah, you get a 5
hey,
freebies.
I was hoping for a dog, an expression with the word dog in it, but
yeah.
that would have
dog's
to
dog's ass, dog's
well, make,
back.
Well, make one up. Go ahead, go.
I can't. So sea of dudes will have to do.
Hey, all right. That's your last freebie.
Shout out to all three of you. It's crazy and to think that we might... that the three of us might get together next weekend. Sounds pretty sweet. And Jesse mentioned Worlds, which hopefully all four of us can somehow get there. And because I think that's quite expensive, right? San Francisco from Montreal. Yeah. So I got to save up to make sure I can get there.
Also, if any of you guys are welcome to crash here or something, like if we can just... If you can, if it's cheaper to actually, for any reason, fly into where I'm at, and then just road trip it, because it's only 4 hours away or 5 hours.
Oh, really?
So that'd be fun to make an extra trip out of it. Southern Oregon. It's right on the border of California.
Ooh.
Because I think it's only, like, how far away from, like, Portland is that?
I'm 4.5 hours from Portland.
Because it was only like $400 for me to fly to Portland.
Yeah, and that could work too if it's way cheaper. I could pick you guys up maybe in Portland, depending on time. So
yeah,
we'd have to.
It's not.
Or even like a bus.
It's not going to be too much cheaper for KYT and I to fly out that far west.
Point.
It's like it's on. But Jay, it's relevant.
Oh man. Jay's staying at the Smitty's.
Oh, Jay and Megan, dude. Bring the wife, man.
There you go.
Her and Andrew would love to hang out. That'd be fun.
You'll meet Jesse's prodigal son, Kai.
Yeah.
Cobra Kai.
And that's all I have. I mean, good luck to our boy Jerry, who's going to be at Memphis. Hopefully, he's clearly one of the best players there, so he probably doesn't need much luck. And that's it. Jay?
Cool. I want to give shout-outs to Lands Delicious, who gave us a shout-out on his podcast.
He is a podcast?
Or he's on a podcast. It's called, like, Avant Card or something.
Oh, yeah, he was a guest.
Okay, and then he's...
Oh, nice.
I guess he's starting one that's about rogue deck building. So it's just... It's about, like, just, like... any format, like EDH, whatever, just like not playing net decks. So it's an interesting premise. I don't know how relevant and fresh that can stay, right? I mean, I guess infinitely it could, but like, I guess we'll see. I'm not like being negative. I'm just saying like, I just don't know like what he asked me to be on it. And I like was honest and was just like, yeah, I'll take a look at it. But I'm trying to think of like what I could possibly talk about on that deck, on a deck building podcast, since I'm not a deck builder. So, but shout out to him for giving us shout outs, and he's a really big supporter of us, and like he's one of our biggest fans for sure. Shout out to Carrie Dan and Cardiography again for always being part of the team, the B team, and when really they are part of the A team, the big A plus team, and they make sure that we run smoothly. So big shout out to them, and definitely to Scotty Mac for all the crazy stuff that's personally going on with me and you. And hopefully that can work out somehow. And
what the?
That sounds like mega Gaydar, but it's not. It's not Gaydar. Your Gaydar's not responding. It's not. There's no beeps. Who else? Let's check this out. Fucking shout out to this spider I just had to kill. Fucking spiders. Fuck, I was just sitting here podcasting, motherfucking spider on my arm. Fucking spiders.
Dude, I hate spiders. Jay, did you see? I just saw you guys talking about that on Twitter, so I went and Googled most dangerous spiders in the world, and I linked an image to Willie G, because he was being all tough.
Oh, really? No, yeah. I didn't see that. I didn't see that. You should link it to me. I don't mind looking at that stuff. Work. I just don't like it touching me.
Yeah, totally. Word.
But, yeah, and then always got to give the good wife plug. Those are really important. Wife plug. I don't know. Who else do I give shout-outs to?
No one.
Cody Crossman. Always got to give shout-outs to Cody Crossman.
That guy's crazy.
He's fucking crazy. And then one time I told him, we were at game day, and these guys were playing. Have you guys ever seen those miniature games with, like, fucking tape measures and shit?
Oh, man, yeah.
Like, little war miniatures and, like...
Warhammer.
And they, like... But it wasn't Warhammer. It was, like, a World War II version of it. And they, like, pulled out, like, a fucking tape measure and shit. But when they were setting up, it looked like they were setting up some kind of, like, farming game. And there was this giant, like, John Deere-looking motherfucker. So I told Cody to be, like, I'll give you $30 to go over there and tip that table over. And then when they look at you and they're like, what the fuck, man? Just be like, agriculture sucks. And he was like, you know, I'm a farmer, right? From Saskatchewan. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I'm not going to say agriculture sucks. Like I was telling a Christian to say like, fuck God or something. Like, like he just got so offended. Agriculture sucks. I'm not going to say that, Jay. I'm not going to say it. I'm a farmer. I'm not going to say that. But big shout out to Cody Crossman. He's like my only deck building tester ride guy. And so I don't give him enough props for all the work that he does to get me to and from F&M. Yeah. And that's about it. That's about it. We'll move on to Scotty. Scotty, man.
Sure. So it looks like I've got to give a shout out to. So we got two shout outs this week over the course of the network, as it were. So reciprocal shout out to the guys over at Scrubland Podcast, Casby and Burrows and D-Sale. These guys are really cool. Also want to give a shout out to Andy over at CommanderCast, of course. They gave us shout outs this week, so you got to pass the love.